You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, it's Yas here, and I'm calling today with a little favour to ask. Over the recent weeks and months, I've had loads of you get in touch with some great questions, and today I'm going to be trying something new with the show. I'm trialling a Q&A segment where I'll be joined by co-host and elite coach educator, Gerard Jones. Now, these are discussions which are going to be taking place every Sunday evening at 7:30 GMT, live on Twitter Space, if you wanted to get involved directly. Otherwise, I'll be releasing them here every Wednesday on the Coaches Network podcast. So for today's format, it's slightly different, and for around about 30 minutes, each discussion will be dedicated to a question that has been sent in, where myself and Joa will be going into some real depth and sharing our views and opinions on the topic in order to leave you with some key takeaways to consider in your own environments. So the favour I'm asking for today, guys, is if you could let me know your thoughts on the new format, and you can do this by getting in touch on Twitter at TheCoachesNet. Once again, that is at TheCoachesNet. And of course, if you have a question, feel free to send that in too. Hope you enjoy the new format.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
I mean, it's an interesting conversation, and this is one where I'm excited to, even as people join, just to get different thoughts. I mean, the question itself, right? You know, is it wrong to base my session plans on specific players? What's your initial thinking on that? You know, before I share my own thoughts, what are you thinking with regards to the question?
Yeah, there's a couple different perspectives that I've kind of come into mind for me anyway. I think first and foremost is the whole session designed around specific players, and I think maybe where the question has come from, is it looking at specific parts of the pitch, or is it specific individuals? If so, what's the subsequent impact on that, on the rest of the group, or any? And is there a right or wrong? Is there a time where it should maybe be focused around that back? Maybe how does it impact on the greater program for the players that are in question, if that makes sense? There's a few different directions it can go in, really, but I think for me, if I was to answer the question with a simple answer, it would be no. I don't think there is wrong to base your session plans on specific players. I think, if anything, the fact that it's based on specific players means that it becomes a bit more dedicated and tailored for the individuals within the group. Now, yes, the flip side of that is that it might not necessarily be catered for everyone, but I think that's where the skill and the challenge of the coach comes in terms of how effective you are within the craft of coaching, to make it more relevant and more impactful for everyone, even though it is specifically designed around set players. But also, equally, if it is set around set players, there's no reason why I can't stretch and challenge you as an individual to compete against that as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, for me, the question itself, is it wrong? I'd say no. In fact, every session should be specific. It's an interesting debate. Like, I know, Daniel, it'd be great to get your thoughts on this as well, having come through the FAW. You know, I was fortunate to work with few people that have obviously been heavily involved in the Welsh FA coach education, and you know, we brought a lot of those ideas over in my last role in Morocco, and you know, a lot of people are familiar with the terms like general principles and specific principles, and like a general practice and a specific practice, as some people like to call. And it was interesting because we had a debate about this in Morocco. We sort of said, well, should every practice be specific? And the answer we were coming to was yes, because I hear this a lot, like people say, oh, I'm doing like a general activity or general principles or general practice, meaning that it's like for everyone and we're going to cover global topics and it's not area specific. There's no field geography, pitch geography specific. There's no individual considerations for players. And to me, I'd almost like, being devil's advocate as a parent, I'd be going, well, why is my kid going to a session if there's not something in there planned for him? So I think the duty of the coach, and for a lot of coaches who start out, it's quite hard to conceptualise it and understand, because one of the biggest areas a lot of coaches struggle with is organisation. You know, how do we organise the practices to basically make sure, one, it's organised to get out the goals that we've set, right, in whatever the topic is, whatever the focus of that session is. But within that organisation, for me, there's got to be individual considerations for, ideally, if you're a master coach, obviously, you're thinking about every individual player. Even if you're just working at the basic level, grassroots, or even, you know, higher development, competitive academy, whatever, for me, it would then be, what one or two individuals are you really going to like laser focus in on? You'll design practices or activities that will stretch and challenge everyone, you know, and some will be facilitative, right? And some will be where they're all getting a repetition of something, like meaningful repetitions. But within that same individual practice, let's say we're working on how we build our attack, working on a possession game, we've got this, you know, 6v4 activity or whatever it may be, then, you know, within that, how are you having a consideration for Johnny, who typically struggles at dealing with pressure from behind, and when the ball arrives to him, how he can hold that ball up and bring people into the game, or recognising that Johnny might need to get better at finishing one-on-one against the keeper, but everyone else needs to work at their decision-making, the touch, how we're breaking lines, finding the free player. So in that same practice, everyone's getting a touch of everything. You know, you've designed a practice around breaking lines, right? And the focus on that touch and how do we find the free player, with the free player, and we build up. But then within that, as we get to a certain area, could it be that Johnny gets, you know, because of the design of the activity, he's getting that one-on-one against the keeper. So once he's thrown goal or anyone's through, there's a time constraint or whatever that you've put on it so that they get to finish against the keeper, because that might be his individual goal. Or it might be that, like, you need to get your goalkeeper better at dealing with the ball from back passes. So how can you find ways to incorporate the keeper within your sessions? So you're making it specific to them. It could be that one player, you know, typically, you know, a lot of players have a foot dominance, don't they? You know, especially the top players. But again, like recognizing moments, how can we finish? Well, we don't always have that time to cut it back onto our right. You might have to, you know, try and get something off on your left or whatever. Well, could you put an activity in, or even a condition or a rule that rewards players for attempts, for tries? So if they do get that shot off on the left foot, they're rewarded, they're incentivized. So it's that try, you know, so there's no fear of failure and getting it wrong. But, you know, there's a reward for doing something that's out of the norm. So for me, you know, to answer that question would be, yeah, every practice, it's not wrong to make it specific. If anything, every practice should be specific. I think for the coaches listening, is how can you be really good at getting the sort of brilliant basics right, if you like, in terms of designing an activity where, even if it's just getting really good at, do you know what, I'm running a team session, but I want to make sure that I hold myself accountable, and Ava or Johnny, whoever that player is, by the end of that session, I've stretched them in line with their needs. I've improved the whole team or the team concept, but we've got really better at, like, that player, whatever that thing was. I've given a couple of examples, I know you have. You know, they've got better at it. And then I think from there, you can grow as a coach, because then once you get good at maybe doing one, then can you maybe stretch yourself and go, okay, can I focus on two players now? Can I focus on three? And then as you get even better, perhaps it's then really thinking about, like, how am I tailoring my coaching interventions to specific players? So that, again, I'm basing my session, I'm actually thinking about the types of questions that I'm going to ask specific to the players that I'm working with. Because some players, like a Dan Ad said at Rochdale, I always remember, he used to hate being frozen, you know, like the freeze or even just sometimes drive-by coaching for him. Hated it because he just felt like there was too much going on in the game and he preferred being in the game. Whereas, so he would prefer more terminal-type coaching where you're coaching him at the end of the break, right, during the water breaks or whatever. Whereas another player, it might be something else. So I think then you're getting those individual considerations, right, Yaz, around that. And yeah, I don't know what your thoughts are on that or even anyone in the room listening.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in there, to be honest. And, you know, from the individual consideration in terms of how you make it specific about the interventions, the type of questions that you ask. Do you know that there's certain players that you've got to ask certain questions to before you even start the session? Is that part of your plan? In other cases, you've got situations where you know through experience with those players that actually they respond better to certain interventions than others. One of the key things that I look at, especially when I'm planning my interventions and looking at how I interact with the players in that respect, is I'm quite observant early on around who doesn't mind being in my demos, who prefers to watch them and who prefers just to listen, you know, who can actually just respond to my instructions. So just, you know, looking at not necessarily what is their dominant learning style in particular, but actually how do they tend to learn in my environment? What's the preferred method of learning in my environment? And not to say that they're limited to doing that only, but in my environment, it's based on XYZ evidence, if you like. So I think those bits are really key. So what's quite interesting is when I announced this topic earlier on this evening, one of my players actually got in touch with me, said to me the best session I did with the team that he was a part of at the time when I was working with them was actually focusing on him exclusively as a winger, which is really interesting to get perspective on. You know, his perspective was that he thought it would be better actually doing more player-specific sessions rather than full team-based generic type of sessions. All I can imagine is the reason is that it's more depth than breadth. And from the individual that's, you know, at the heart of that, they're probably getting a lot more value out of it. And I think that, you know, there's definitely a consideration there. But also playing devil's advocate, similar to what you said. You know, if I was a parent looking in on this, say, well, how does this fit in for my parent, or my player, sorry, or my son or my daughter? And I think the bigger question to ask is, well, to highlight is, well, your son or daughter is not always going to be at the heart of everything that happens. Therefore, if they're not always at the heart of everything that happens, they're going to have to learn to not be at the heart of everything that happens. So, yeah, there's a few different considerations there. Don't know what your thoughts are on that. Or, Tony, you got anything you want to add on that?
No, I'd agree. I just wanted to, just quickly, and it's great to get everyone's thought, definitely Tony's as well, experience. And even Johnny, who's actually coming, you know, from rugby, to be going to get a different perspective as well. The other thing I'd add on to that is that I agree with the making it as personal as possible. You know, there should almost be this phrase where how can we create these personalised experiences for players? Because otherwise, the danger we come is that we put on all these activities, but actually how much of it was relevant to them. So some people just put on these, I hate the word drill, but they'll put on a drill for a drill or a practice for a practice or whatever because they think, oh, that looks good or whatever, it makes me look good. And some of these might be flowing quite well, but then by the end of it, has that helped so-and-so get better at dealing with like heading and like how to get better at defensive heading? If that's something that they need to get better at or whatever. I always remember, I'll use this example. There was a boy that we released at one of the clubs. I won't say which one. And it wasn't a told-you-so moment. I'm not doing it for that. I'm just using it as an example because we all make collective mistakes, right? At the time, I felt we shouldn't have released him. Anyway, long story short, we ended up releasing this kid and it was hard. This was sort of in the initial stages of ECCC when ECCC came in 2012, and we'll just get into the sort of process of documenting stuff and, you know, having rationales and things like that and having everything evidenced. And I remember the the conversation with the parents and say, hey, we're going to release a kid, blah, blah, blah. And they had a blooming good counter-argument, because I'm using that defensive heading because that was one of the things. We're releasing this defender that he's not good enough at positioning, his marking, heading, can't head the ball, do this, do that. And the mum actually came back and said, how much of the practices, because the mum was at everything, how many of the practices have you actually worked on this? Have you worked on some of these things? And the reality was nothing, like none. A lot of the practices were very much possession-based, working on a lot of attacking stuff, which we were guilty of, right, because of the curriculum that we had, and we were sort of enforced to put out there, if you like. But then we've released this kid because he's not good enough at X, Y, Z. Well, the mum and dad can come back at us and go, yeah, but I'm watching your sessions. You've never once worked on that with him or even given him any resources to... Do you know what I mean? So I think what you're on about there is good. And that phrase, like breadth versus depth, let's try and design stuff where we can actually go deep on stuff versus trying to cover everything. And make sure that if the kid's walking away from the practice, have they really got out what they need? You know, are we making an impact or are we just filling time? Because I think often a lot of the sessions, we're just filling time, aren't we? You've got 90 minutes or an hour, and we're just filling it.
I think it's not just going through the breadth versus depth, but it's also recognising that as coaches, not all of that breadth and not all of that depth needs to be covered on an on-field session. It's what is the stuff that you're doing away from that as well. And the biggest thing that, you know, the thing that I kind of bang on a lot about in my coaching and to coaches that I work with is how much clarity have you got in your communication and how much clarity have you got in the understanding of your players as well. So just because I've done something doesn't mean it's had the desired impact. Just because I haven't done something doesn't mean they don't already know it. And then it's just like you said, you know, you've got that situation where if parents are attentive and they're actually recognising what's going on and actually mindful of what you're delivering with their children, essentially. Where's your, you know, what can you definitely go back to a point and say, actually, we gave that player enough support on that, and ultimately, you know, the reality is you're never gonna have the answer to this question. But if there was enough support given, why haven't they still not achieved it? Was it through their own fault, or was it through a lack of competency of the coach? Which I know can be, you know, quite a controversial thing to say, I guess, but. It's just, for me, our coaches holding themselves accountable enough around the outcomes and what they're managing to achieve with the players they've got. You know, you hear all the time about coaches who talk about the players that they've coached that have gone on to do well. But actually, you probably had 10, hundreds more that you've probably been part of that haven't gone on. And yes, it's not impossible. You know, you can't polish a turd at the end of the day. But in most cases, you've got situations where players have been let down and coaches in some cases have not been good enough to support them. So just a side note. But Tony, good evening, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thanks. Yaz, good evening, everybody. It's interesting because the final point there that Gerard was making is something that I've not only been guilty of, but I've spoken about quite a lot, both on here and away from here on other bits and pieces. You know, you release, using that same example, releasing a player for, he's not very good at defending in wide areas. And then you look back over what sessions you've actually delivered and you find you've done 75% attacking small-sided games kind of thing. And, you know, we have been guilty at times of letting players down and then making those bland release statements without actually questioning ourselves. Have we provided that player with all the tools that he needs in his toolbox? But going back to the sort of the title of the Twitter space, when I first saw it pop up earlier on this afternoon, I kind of thought, I must have read it wrong at first, because I thought, so I'm going to do my session tonight for little Johnny when I've got 17 other players. But then I read it again and I thought, do you know what? And this is not me trying to blow my own trumpet. All of my sessions are based on specific groups rather than specific players, because we work to a curriculum which doesn't prioritise the development of one area over another. it doesn't prioritise one area of the pitch over another. And whilst the focus of any particular session, for example, playing out from the back, would primarily focus on maybe the goalkeeper in the back three or the back four, depending on your system, if you use your forwards in opposition, the focus isn't on them, but actually what they do is important. If you were doing it, let's say you had only 11 players turn up and you were working on playing out from the back, there's no reason why you couldn't involve your forward players in playing out from the back in terms of their positioning in relation to where the ball is. So I think that unless you are just putting on a game and throwing down a ball and saying, right, crack on, and then you float from one area of the pitch to another, it's absolutely vital that you base your session plan around specific units rather than specific individual players. Some of those players within that unit might require more of your time than others, but that's down to how well you know your players and how well you know your team, in my opinion.
So, Tony, on that one there, where you're talking about small groups or units, how do you individualise it? So, to get out that individual focus, because obviously we're looking at how you can make it as specific as possible to what they need to be able to, let's say, operate in that unit or operate in those small group relationships. How do you still individualise it whilst planning for little groups, as you said?
I think for me, it's either playing players in their position with the players who play near them in a game in the right spaces, or a little bit of tinkering with pitch geography. You know, in the old days, on the UEFA B, for example, you wouldn't use the full width of the pitch. You'd use from one touchline to the back post, or you know, a particular area. But I think that by putting the players in the positions that they're going to play in, with the players that they're going to play with around them, more often than not, you would be able to... Your feedback's still going to be individualised. And I guess your start positions and what kind of pressure you put them under within the session would lead you to be able to bring out the coaching points that you think that they need. So that's probably the way that I'd go about it.
Yeah, I was thinking then, just listening, that situational learning, like how much are we designing this stuff where it looks like the situations are going to be in, the relationships they're going to be in, the actual area of the field that they're going to be in, the pitch geography, especially like not everyone's got access to all the facilities, or maybe, you know, they might only have a third or whatever, but you can still design practices where you're making the relevance or the reference to where they will be on the pitch and how it relates to their game. So, I was just listening to you there, I was thinking situational learning. How much do we do that?
Yeah, I mean, I know for example, this week we've had to rearrange one of the girls' teams had to rearrange a game. So I know that on Thursday night with my under-15s group, for example, I've literally got a sixth of the pitch. I've got half of a third. Now, if I've got 17 players turn up, I need to tweak my practice design to try and maximise ball rolling time, to try and maximise the right situations. And again, sometimes being old has its advantages, because I've been put in most situations over the last 20 years of coaching where I can either adapt on the fly, or, you know, I've got something in the locker that I can put on for that particular practice.
Perfect. And Daniel, anything from you, your end? Just some of your experiences and maybe what you're doing at Cardiff.
2 seconds. I'm just getting in the house. It was great to listen to you guys in the car around the sort of stuff that you're doing at your clubs. And one thing, again, just going back to, I guess, the topic of conversation is one thing we do a lot of, or one thing we're trying to be better at, I guess, is sort of co-coaching. You talk about sort of, Tony just mentions the in and out of possession there. One coach does the in possession, one coach does the out possession. And that's one of the major things that we're trying to get better at as a club. And then probably the other thing then around sort of being really specific in terms of the way that we do things. We have the sort of luxury, I guess, of having two coaches, and then we might get one or two younger boys come up and sort of, I guess, not interns, but want to be a part of it and help out. So we're able to bullseye, I could say the word bullseye, but work individually with players while the session's going on. 2, 3, 4 players are getting really individual, specific detail around what they're doing within the practice, be that terminally, be that flyby, be that drive-by. So we're able then to give them real specific detail in the moment when things are going on, if you know what I mean. So that's where we're trying to go as a club, really, I guess.
That's good to hear, because again, like I saw this the other day, we do a lot of it even at the club I'm with now. We'll talk about like opposition coaching, and we'll co-coach within the group where you've got two or more coaches working together, but then also having coaches coach against you. So I like it a lot, especially if you can almost design the problems or create the problems that you want the team to try and outplay, if you like, which will make it as game-like as possible. So I think that's huge. And then obviously, as you say, you can get the individual specific detail within that. So if we're setting up the opposition to play within a certain way and press us in a certain way or defend in a certain way, and then it's how do we outplay in those areas, you can also individualise it where you're putting certain variations, you know, certain players against certain people. Yes. And it's, all right, how do you deal with this scenario? So if the opposition do this, they mark you in this way, or they have this defensive organisation, how do we outplay that? So I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, and one of the things we're quite big on at the moment as well is trying to be sort of getting the better players playing with the playing against the better players. So again, there's that real challenge around sort of the right level of challenge, I guess. And then the support then is where we come into that, in terms of trying to give ideas or trying to sort of ask the right questions to allow the players then to come up with the solutions themselves, instead of us just being constantly telling them what to do. So that's another big thing. So say, for example, in 1v1s, we'll put the strong players against each other to allow them to really test themselves, to give them that real level of challenge to, again, the intensity goes through the roof once they know who they're playing against. Whereas if they're playing against, say, a lower order player, then they might see a drop in.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sort of motivation, I guess. So again, that comes into it as well. There's a whole variety of different things that we can talk about around this topic, and it's a really good topic, to be fair, guys, to pick.
No, thanks for sharing. Appreciate it. Anything from you, Yaz, or anyone else in the room? You know, Paul or James, Johnny, you know, working in a different sport. Anything anyone else wants to add?
Can I just pick up on that bit that Daniel made there about playing the best against the best? I think that's, when you're working in academy football, I think that's it's really easy to do, because they're mainly of a level, whereas at grassroots, obviously where I'm working now, it's a lot harder to do. I think the other thing that can make it difficult, but not impossible, is that if everybody's involved in all your training sessions, that they all kind of know the answers. And this goes to a point that Yaz has made a couple of times, I think, on different Twitter spaces. They all know the answers, and you know, when you ask the question, it'll come back at you as part of a list. But actually, this will be the time when you get to see who has taken it in or who can deal with that situation, rather than just spieling back a load of words. This is the proof in the pudding now. Can you actually do it?
Tony, I think that's a fantastic point. And I think, you know, one thing, I don't want to be controversial, but one thing I'll challenge coaches on, and I really challenge them on, is be accountable. So I feel a lot of the time when coaches ask those questions where they're trying to get a list reeled off for themselves, it's actually from insecurity. I think it's actually from insecurity and ego, and understanding that actually if the players tell me what I want to hear, then I can satisfy myself as a coach that I've done a good job. But actually, when you start asking the real questions and really getting to check their understanding and clarify their understanding, then you might put yourself in a bit of a pickle. Especially, you know, we talked earlier in this conversation here about when your coaches are telling players they've been released for XYZ reason. This is the time where you get to really assess, well, did I give them XYZ reason to stay in the building? So just a bit of a side note on what's been said so far. I don't know what you want, if there's anything you want to add on to that, Gerard.
Can I just come in on Yaz's point there? Just around that point, Yaz. One of the things that I think is really sort of important there is the real questions, is what are the real questions? I think one of the things when you do get, I call them buzzwords, you get back at you sort of, what do we do this week? Or how could you sort of answer the question to what's being asked of you is why, what, how, and give them real and ask for detail, because I think that's really important, because again, we get buzzwords, but I think asking sort of give me detail is something that's really important. And then, like you said, you see the players then, Antoni made the point of, you see the players then who actually have learned and who have the understanding is coming from asking for real detail instead of it just being words, lines, lists, like you said, in terms of if they give me real detail, then I know learning's taken place, or as they're starting to take place, if you know what I mean.
I think you're spot on. I think, you know, for me, you know, just to elaborate on that and give you some context, what those real questions could look like, it is the who's, the why's, the how's, rather than the what's. It is the would's, the will's, the might's, rather than the is and the did. Do you know what I mean? And the can. So I think it's just really going to that depth of, again, we're talking about that word, you know, that whole concept of depth versus breadth again, go right to the core of things to make sure that players are really given that real detail. And not because you're challenging them in a way to see whether they know the detail necessarily, but more you want to know what they understand. What can they articulate back to you if at all necessary? And even beyond that, you know, if the time allows and resources allows and the situation you're in allows it, get them to demonstrate it for you. It doesn't always have to be in a post-session debrief. I mean, I was having a conversation with coaches a couple of weeks back, and I was just saying that for me, if you're waiting to the end of your session to do a quote-unquote debrief to assess whether the players have learned what you wanted them to learn, you've missed the boat. You should be checking in on that constantly throughout the session, to the point where when you're getting to the end of the session, they're just summarising the key messages and even challenging you around what's next, rather than you just, you know, ticking off a list as we've described it. To say, yeah, we've done this, this, and this. Okay, that's great. We've done this and this. But how are you going to apply it? If we've done this and this, that's the key bit. How are you going to apply it? When might this be useful to you? Yes, I know we learned about passing and finishing today. Or yes, I know we learned about combinations today. Or we learned about playing up from the back. But what might be the challenges with the way that we looked at it? What might be the pros and cons of it? And just looking at different ways just to expand their thoughts on it. Obviously, don't spend your whole session asking questions, but think about the questions you're going to ask and what value they're going to add as well.
Yeah, like one of the ways that we challenge learning around sort of how we've done things is also on analysis sessions. Again, I know that comes from a place of sort of privilege, I guess, of working in the environments that I work in. But we're able to use analysis sessions to get the boys to really check and challenge their learning. It's something that's a really big tool that we use in Saturday morning sessions. We have half hour dedicated to analysis, which again allows the boys to really sort of, I guess, show their knowledge to us, and show that they've taken on learning or taking on what we've asked them to do over the week, for example, yeah, on the theme that we've done.
Or even prepping them for the week ahead. But I think, you know, something that's just got me really, really noted on that, Dan, I think, is first of all, I think it's fantastic that you guys are doing it. Obviously, you're in an environment where it's easily accessible and it's very feasible to get it done. And it's probably conscious and deliberate, dedicated time for it. But I also don't want coaches who are not working in an environment to think that there's any excuses for them not to be able to. I mean, every single environment now, I mean, the amount of VO cameras or Pixlr or whatever other platforms that they use to get their games recorded now, they're all over the place. They're everywhere. So it's not like it's not achievable. I get it from a standpoint of maybe time and being able to dedicate appropriate time to it. But then this is where, as a coach, you can do yourself some favours. And if you're deliberate and intentional, I think there is the resources, there is the support, there is the mechanisms that you can put in place to get as much support for your players as possible in that respect. So I think definitely a note worth making. I'm not sure if you could share any experiences or any other insights from yourself, Gerard. How do you guys do things over in the States at the moment, Gerard?
In terms of
that you know, that off-field piece around analysis, or even just generally, you know, is there a view to how you guys deliver sessions across the board for the club, and whether specific players are targeted in that process, or whether, you know, it's a similar approach to what Tony said, in that, you know, all the sessions are going to be themed, so by nature they're going to be naturally linked to certain players in certain parts of the pitch anyway.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I think you'll probably achieve a lot of these things irrespective anyway, right, by putting on an activity. If it's organised and you put people into... We're quite fortunate. We've got 10 multi-sport pitches, all-turf pitches. So everything's lined up. So we have 11-a-side lines on the pitch. We have 7v7 and 9v9. All the coaches who coach 11-a-side upwards all have a minimum half a pitch, sometimes more. And then obviously all the other teams, they all have the natural lines. So every session we... really, there should be no excuses, to be honest, with the coaches, is everything's all field geography specific because we've got the space. So we're able to put on sessions that look like the game, put them in their areas. Sometimes we'll coach against each other. We'll do opposition coaching, co-coaching against each other. We'll have individuals targeted. I say to the coaches, just get really good at focusing on Daniel used the word bullseye, and I used to use that before, and then I'm now talking about laser, because over here they didn't understand what bullseye meant, so we just said laser focus on 1, 2, 3 players max in every session. So we have that where we'll organise the teams in terms of the right shapes, and everything has to have a clear shape in it, organisation, no matter what the activity is, small numbered or more game-like, if it's more of an attack-me-defense type stuff. Everything's clear organization within the shapes. And then within that, we would focus on, as I say, 1 to 3 players max in everything. And then the coaches are held accountable. But we've also started doing stuff where we've asked the players beforehand, like, how can I help you today? So the kids will write on the whiteboard. And they'll also ask for certain individual coaches. So there's been times where, you know, as a DOC, like a head of coaching, I've walked up and some players have pulled me out and gone like, hey, can you work with me today? And other players, they'll ask for other coaches or they'll ask for certain objectives. And then by the end of it, the coaches will talk and the players will give us feedback and they're ruthless and they'll say like, hey, you know, I got this out of the session today, or no, I didn't. And we're fortunate, we have cameras, so we VO, like you said, like the two games I'm at now, we've got the VO cameras up. We've got indoor classrooms, so we'll have people go inside. Sometimes I'm trying to get them to frame the session as well. So frame the session beforehand, use the classroom, get them to meet early, show them individual clips from the game and clips that are examples around what we're working on. like good practice as well as animation of what the session looks like and why we're achieving those outcomes, and asking the players beforehand. And then we'll obviously share the session plan beforehand as well, or at least try to, so the players can really get to see what they're working on, and then within that, what their individual objective is, and then go out onto the pitch. It's not always possible, but with some of our teams, we're actually able to do that. Go in, frame it before, then go onto the pitch, and then, as I say, everything's pitch specific. And now what I'm finding is I'm trying to mentor the coaches in just being better at their organisation, but more now it's like the individual detail that comes out of the mouth. So how's the feet, you know, how can we ask better questions? How can we ask questions that develop high level thinking? And then if, you know, when we need to be direct, how can we be direct, but really paint a clear picture with the players? So we're offering that support that they need. It's not ambiguous, because I think that's where we're, you know, at times where we fall down is it's either the information we're given isn't as detailed enough for what the kids need. It's almost like playing, and even the questions, it's a little bit like low-level thinking questions. So we're like playing bingo, and then they'll say the right answer. That's not really thinking, do you know what I mean? They're just regurgitating. And then how well do we plan for, you know, what we said before? How well do we plan for individuals around how best they might prefer to take on board information, or in this particular experience, how they want to receive it? So with some of my stronger coaches, without going off on one, I'm able to push them a little bit further, more experienced staff. And with them, they're now thinking about like how and when they give feedback, but also who dictates that information. Because normally it's always the coach who stops it, freezes it, or tells or whatever, right? We'd agree. Whereas we're trying to create environments where the players come to us first. So the players start that interaction, and the players speak first and last in every interaction, which has thrown a few people off. So that's how we're trying to do it. And then, of course, we'll use the VO. Over here, it's quite big, because in the US, it's very big on like college soccer. Everyone wants to play high school or college. So eventually, there'll come a point where they're using those clips for their own individual use, right? To then share to college coaches or whatever to, you know, hopefully get some of the offers, which would be like playing pro in England. That's how it works, if that helps.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just important, you know, just interesting to obviously get different perspectives. And, you know, as you well know, you know, working in different parts of the world, obviously people have different perceptions of what it should or could look like. So it's just really interesting. But again, even in that setting, still using stuff that's accessible to grassroots environments in terms of the VO. And, you know, if you're a coach listening to this in grassroots, you know, there's also a lot of people out there, if you haven't got VO accessible to your club, actually you could go and, there's a lot of people actually renting them out to come and get games recorded. So there is different ways to do it. Even in training, just pull out your phone and just record a piece of training and see if there's any bits that you can pick up. But, you know, without moving too far away from the topic of the conversation, in terms of planning sessions for your specific players, I mean, I think for me, you know, if the overarching thing is, I don't think it is wrong. I think it's actually spot on in some ways. And, you know, if you look at it from a different perspective, the one that Tony's presented is, by the nature of obviously planning sessions in different parts of the pitch and different themes, you're naturally going to, you know, have specific players targeted at each of the sessions anyway, whether or not you highlight them specifically or explicitly. So I think there's definitely a place for it. It's just being considerate and deliberate and intentional around whether you're aware of the specific players that you're targeting or whether you're just giving generic information in that respect. But yeah, I don't know if there's anything you want to add there.
Do you know what, a random one, actually, something pretty cool. So in Morocco, and again, different contexts, you're talking more elite. You've got players that are coming to the national team that will, some will play at like your lower league clubs like Vålerenga, or not their lower, but teams that are playing in like Norway, Sweden, whatever, right? And certain, maybe the Eredivisie in Holland, or you've got like the Veikkausliiga, you've got people in Finland and so forth, or Eliteserien, which is obviously Norway. But then we would have players in like PSV, Chelsea came to the World Cup. We had the goalkeeper in some of our national teams was there for the under-17s, under-20s was at Chelsea, West Ham, Everton, so forth, right? And funnily enough, in Morocco, really interesting. The players at the national team level, they would actually design with the coach the activities. They'd be involved in the practice design. So co-designing with the players. And that was taken to another level. But they would actually be really heavily invested in what their clips look like, what's going on at the clubs. There'd be that relationship and communication between the clubs as well. They would obviously know what they're doing. They'd review their own games. And then, a bit like Gundogan, that famous video that's done the rounds on Twitter. But they would actually sit down with, I still remember it now, Sergio, and anyone, I encourage you to look him up. He's working at Saudi Arabia now with the under-23s national team. Sergio, outstanding coach, Spanish. And he used to sit for hours with the coaches, with the players. And the players were like the coaches. And we end up using this on our courses where we said, like, because some of the clubs at the grassroots level and even at some of the academies in Morocco, they'd say, oh, we haven't got the money, we haven't got analysts or whatever. And we were able to flip it and go, you've got 11 analysts on the team. You know, you've got whatever your roster, you know, format of the game is. These players, they can be your analysts. Like, they can learn and they can see the game. They're playing the game, help them become more game responsive. And we had these players actually designing the activities with the coach and being involved in those discussions of, like, we're going to do this midfield unit, beating the block here. Where do I need to be? What are some of the movements I need to create? Well, what if we move the counter goal here? Because that'll relate to me playing into that number 10. Or, like, they were actually involved in that. I think that's awesome. So the players were becoming more like coaches. And now, to me, the question would then become, how could you do that in your environment if you haven't got those intelligent players or you haven't got those resources? Well, you could still do it. There's still a way that you could co-design. It's find out, like, ask them questions of, you know, what makes playing fun for them. Like, why do they play soccer? What are some of the positions that they typically play? And then think about, well, what rules could we introduce? Might even be live during the session. Like, I've done that before where I've said things like, how can we make this more challenging? And the players will come up with better challenges than maybe what I've got as a coach. That's where I stole all my best ideas. You know, they'd go, oh, well, what if we do, you know, number of passes equals number of goals or whatever if we do that? They'll come up with it. And at least then it gets them thinking about connecting that why that I know you always talk about, Yaz, you know, like, what's the relevance to me? Why are we doing this? That clarity that you mentioned before with Tony, to me, I think it achieves that. You know, the more we can involve the players in that co-design, the more we're going to get them to really make sense of why we're doing what we're doing in the sessions. So yeah, just to add on to that. Tony, sorry, I saw your hand up. I don't want to take away from you.
No, I've kind of changed my mind a little bit, but I'll throw it in now anyway, since you came back to me. Just going back to what I was saying before with regard to the different units in the different areas of the pitch, if people want to see it, I'll share our syllabus that we use. I'm happy to post it because I actually think that although it's something that I've brought out of academy football with me, I'm now doing it with my grassroots club, and we're doing these Monday night carousel sessions, which we've only just started, where we're getting the players in. It's a voluntary thing, so it's a little bit hit and miss because it means that we're teaching what we want to teach to some players within the team, but they're not all obliged to turn up. But I do believe quite solidly that it's something that whether you're coaching an under-9s grassroots team or a men's senior team playing at whatever level, that you can adapt it to your own needs. And, you know, once you get the principles embedded within your players, those questions that we all feel that we need to ask, or we sometimes definitely need to ask when we're training, don't come up quite so much because you've covered it either using video, PowerPoint, whatever, to get those principles embedded. And then when we go out onto the pitch, you will start to see the transfer. And what I'm starting to see now, even after only 3 weeks of doing it, is we've gone from maybe 4 people turning up on a Monday night to 6 or 7 turning up. And it's gradually, you know, word's getting out within amongst the players, actually, this is not too bad on a Monday night. You know, we talk through this, that, and the other. What I've asked the players to do, or the coaches of the teams, is on a after we've played on a Saturday morning, come get your players or you as a coach, come to me with one thing in possession and one thing out of possession that you need better understanding of that's just happened in your game. So it's fresh in their minds. Then on a Monday night, I'll sit down with the tactics board, Sabutio table, whatever we've got to hand, and we'll go through it with them. And if necessary, get the players to move the pieces around. So they're involved in their own learning.
No, I'm glad you actually shared that. I'm glad you didn't miss it out. I think that's a great one. I love it just to see it, you know, when you share on Twitter. And I like that lasting piece, like even just involving the players, moving the markers versus always us, or moving the Sabuti or whatever. So, brilliant. I love it. Has anything you want to add, or if anyone else wants to add anything for the good of the room?
Yeah, just tag on to that last piece, really. I mean, something, sharing experience of what I did recently with a few players. I did an off-field coaching task with a squad of players under 15s and 16s, and in this one, it was always just to kind of get them used to the idea of it. Of it also a grassroots setting. I had all the players basically get together 30 minutes, send them some clips in advance just to review, gauge some perceptions, gauge some ideas and understanding around the concept of penetration as an example, right? And what I did with them is similar to what Tony said, you know, get the Sabutio out. But what I did with them was split them up into smaller groups, get them to kind of discuss it amongst each other around what their understanding is of that. And then they would then have to present back to the other groups, and the other groups were allowed to ask questions and probe on what their understanding was, just to get, you know, really, again, it was a fascinating exercise just to see where the players are at and types of questions they might come up with themselves, and what kind of pitfalls they might end up falling into amongst each other. But off the back of that, I had another great idea came from it, was that a smaller task, you maybe have small groups of four, whatever the concept is, they've all got to come up with like a definition or an explanation of it. And the person who can it's almost like Chinese whispers in a sense, but the person who can make their definition last the longest, where, so for instance, if I explain something to you, Gerard, you'll have to make a decision as to whether you're going to stick with my definition or you think your one's better. Now, if I can convince you that my one's better and you stick with it, I get a point. And they work it up. And basically, by the end of it, you see, right, who's got the best understanding and the most agreeable understanding around different concepts as well. Just a little bit of a side note. I know it's slightly different from the topic itself of the conversation that we're having tonight, but I thought it would be a great thing to add on to what Tony said as well, in terms of checking and challenging, understanding, and different ways in which we can support players in those environments. I'm conscious of time.
I was going to say, but I think Gerard's had a red card on the side of his
possibly.
Pitch. And a Marco Silva,
yeah,
on
possibly.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, I think, you know, I'm conscious of time as well, Gerard. I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add to that, but
I
wanted to add a note and say that, you know, it's good to see there's some new faces in the room as well. So, you know, guys that have joined us for the first time, please make sure you join us, follow us. And we're here every Sunday on different conversation topics. So obviously, feel free to get involved and share some insights, because there is always some great experience in the room. And maybe not as much shared reflective of what's available to us in the rooms as well. So definitely please make sure you're following us and joining us going forward. Gerard, over to you, man.
No, good. Brilliant. I think it's been great. Really good discussion. Great to see different people. I love the ideas for me, different perspectives. So I look forward to next weekend. You know, hope everyone has a great rest of the weekend and hopefully try some of these things. I think that's the best thing, is like anything that's new or different, or you might already be doing it but you want to try it in a different way, just be creative and try it in your practices, try it in midweek, you know, at the games. What's the worst that can happen, you know, and just get more experiences of doing different things and thinking differently, and, you know, trying to create better experiences for our players. So really appreciate everyone who's, you know, joined in today, because it's a huge commitment to the environment we're trying to create.
Def- Most definitely, guys. And if you haven't caught the full conversation, it will be available to you on the Coaches Network podcast. So please feel free to check that out. It'll be released every Wednesday. You'll see there's episodes coming out every Friday as well. And myself and Joe, and obviously over the last few months, we run a few webinars, which have been accessible to all. There'll be a few more coming out over the next few months, so keep an eye out on our pages for those as well. And Gerald, I don't know if you just want to sign off with a little note around you, Learnably, and where they can access that.
Yeah, feel free just to click on the tag, so you Learnably with the Twitter handle, and find out more about some of the courses or even just some of the mentoring opportunities. And until next time, guys.
Awesome. Take care, guys. Have a great evening. And a happy rest of the Mother's Day for everyone that's celebrating it. Take care, guys.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.